Hello, everybody. I'm Phil Margavichus, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. For more information on Project MedTech and to sign up for our monthly newsletter, visit our website at www.projectmedtech.com and follow us on LinkedIn. If you are enjoying this content, don't forget to check out our other podcasts by searching Funding MedTech on your favorite podcast platform or by heading to our website. Funding MedTech is an interview-style podcast focused on exploring ways to fund MedTech innovation and will be released weekly on Wednesdays. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins. Building MedTech companies the right way based on great technology is not a one-size-fits-all endeavor. McDonald Hopkins provides customized and proactive strategies that align clients' valuable MedTech technology with their business goals. This in turn builds those clients into successful, thriving companies. With strong experience and depth in the startup, venture capital, intellectual property, and fundraising arenas, McDonald Hopkins can be an important part of your team to help you develop the MedTech business that you envision. In this episode, Jeff Sirik at Priya Healthcare and Dwayne Mancini discuss the importance of health economics and reimbursement, scaling a MedTech service company, the culture of a growing company, and so much more.
Okay, Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dwayne. Nice to see you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jeff, we were just kind of talking pre-call because I was a delinquent and missed our pre-call.
I thought I was part of the delinquency too, so I think we're good on that one.
All right, good. Background's fascinating. Love to just get a feel of who you are. And what you're currently the CEO of Priya Healthcare. But I'd love to get your background, because as you're giving me your background, you know, it's always interesting when I talk to various leaders of service providers. Like, we've had GreenLake Guru CEO on, we've had Valentium CEO on, we've had these different groups on, and it's just interesting to hear their background of how they got to where they are on the service side. And when you were talking about yours, I just found it super interesting. So a little bit of background on who you are, what you do, and then lead that up to what you're doing at Priya right now, and also what Priya does.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, thank you, Dwayne, on that side. And I think every journey is a little bit different, right? To become a CEO, some are, you know, take a shorter period of time, some are longer period of time. And certainly all those journeys along the way make us who we are as leaders today. Certainly that's the case for me as I have probably a diversified background. And as I had mentioned to you, I grew up in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. I received my finance degree from University of St. Thomas. Side little fun note, I was a hockey player there as well. I still try to skate when I can, and it's bred up in Minnesota, and I've carried that over to Massachusetts here as well. And for myself, I really felt like I wanted to get into the medical side of the business coming out of school. And I began my career, I thought, with a big company was going to be important. So I started with Pfizer, and I was there for about 6 years. I was on the pharma side of that, and started to migrate my career in that medical device background. I took a few different promotions with Pfizer when I was there. I moved from the Twin City area to Indianapolis, and then into the Pittsburgh area. And then I wanted to move more into the device side of the business. So I went to work with a company called Sopha Medical. It was a nuclear medicine imaging company at the time, kind of a startup company as well, as we're going to talk about the differences between working for these big companies and the startups and the influence it has to people like myself. But this was more of a startup company. And I was there for a couple of years and then migrated to a company called ADAC Laboratories. And they were both nuclear medicine companies. The difference was that Sopha was a startup and ADAC was a market-leading nuclear medicine company that was eventually purchased by Philips, right? But in all these roles, I was more in the commercial-facing dynamic, sales, marketing, which gave me what I thought was a pretty good foundation for my career moving forward. at that point, I decided to make a change. And if you go back in time, I'm a little bit older than you, Dwayne. So I'm going to bring you back in time where you were in like 2000 or 2001 and the excitement of what that was as far as technology companies and internet companies and what that was. And I figured, you know what, this is a good time for me in my career with the experience I had to take a little bit of a risk. So I went to work for a company called Color Kinetics. And Color Kinetics was actually a digital LED lighting company. And the concept between the digital lighting LED is they took the red, green, and then the blue LED came out and they put a microprocessor around it. And what that did is it created a additive lighting technology without utilizing filters, right? In different means of subtractive type of lighting. It seems very simple, but it really revolutionized the lighting market. And eventually they got into white light. But I was there for a handful of years on my end. I think it ended up being 6 years as well. And I moved myself to the Boston area during the time I took a VP of sales role with Color Kinetics. I ended up in the Boston area. And I really thought, Dwayne, at the time, I'd be moving for a few years, right? And then move back to Minnesota or Pittsburgh. And I've been in the Boston area, actually Newburyport, Mass, here in the North Shore for 24 years now, right? So it was a move that really impacted my life a long time. But Color Kinetics was a success story, right? Because as you know, a lot of these startup companies, it's really hard to make it through that journey and have a successful exit. And I was a part of that journey, right? And I learned a lot from that. They eventually sold to Philips for a large amount of money. They actually went public and then they sold to Philips and they had a terrific exit on their side. But I learned a ton from the individuals that were there at the company. I was actually the ninth employee at the time. So I worked through that whole fundraising process, venture process, and the demands of what the commercial impact of the business was going to be at that time. But I knew I wanted to get back into medical, right? And for me, I found an opportunity at GE Healthcare. And I thought GE Healthcare was a unique opportunity for me because it was in their cardiovascular ultrasound division at the time. And GE is obviously, you know, a very branded company, terrific technology, terrific people, unbelievable training, amazing leaders have come out of that company. But this was a startup division of this larger company, right? Which to me, I thought was very attractive that we were able to really build a cardiovascular ultrasound product with almost no brand against some market leaders with a big company behind us. And we were very, very successful. Matter of fact, we took them from really off the map to being the number one ultrasound company in the world. Now, it's since you've gone back and forth, and Philips is an amazing company and other companies are involved in it. But at the time, I was part of a company that went from zero to, you know, well over $150 to $200 million. Omar Ishrak, who didn't spend time at Medtronic as CEO, oversaw the GE cardiovascular ultrasound division at the time. So we had terrific leadership, a lot of influence on that side of the business as well. So for me, that run was really important for my career because it, again, brought me into what I thought was a really high quality individuals, fantastic product, but it was a company that needed to start from the beginning of their process and build a brand around that. From that point, I decided to go back into the startup route truly again, right? Without the umbrella of GE Healthcare coming over the top of it to kind of accelerate the funding and support of that, to work for a company called Zoft. And Zoft was a very important decision for me because Zoft was the first time that I'd ever gone to the med device on the radiation oncology side of things, right? And what that meant for me was certainly a different product, a different process, you know, a different impact point. It was mainly Zoft was an electronic brachytherapy technology that focused in on breast and focused in on skin is their main indications on that side of it. An absolutely amazing technology that really never met its full potential. The company is still out there, that it's being utilized in different areas or fantastic skin product now. But the challenges with Zoft were really the ability for us to take a new technology and get it accepted into the societies, get it accepted by the radiation oncology community, get it accepted by the payers, right? The private payers, get the proper coding, get a consistent financial story around that. This is the piece of my career that I had never been a part of before, right? the ability to understand how we take a product and make it a fiscally responsible product for the investors and a product that we can get to the patients. So I left that experience thinking to myself, we have to find a way to bring great technology to patients. It's a complex process. It's cumbersome. It's an ever-moving challenge. You've got a private payer network. You've got Medicare involved. You've got CMS involved. There are a lot of pieces and parts to maneuver and understand. And for individuals that start new companies up, their expertise is not in reimbursement. It certainly wasn't mine at the time, right? I was just learning on how that was. So that stay at Zoft really impacted my life considerably. And from Zoft, I ended up then getting into the service side of the business, right? Which is kind of how I migrated into the Prius side. I spent 2.5 years at a company called Triple Ring, a technologies. This company is a engineering services co-development provider based out of Northern California, a incredibly vast group of engineers and talent within that organization there. But that's where I really started to understand better how to position services in the customer's product journey, right? Really, really important for me to understand that in my journey as an individual where I wanted my career to go. So I spent 2.5 years at Triple Ring learning a lot of that. And then ironically enough, I had an opportunity to go back to Zoft by the acquired company called ICAD, right? And I was at ICAD supporting the Zoft business and then became the chief commercial officer of ICAD, which for me was a great exposure and experience to work with a company that was a publicly held company, number one, back with a technology that I understood very well on the Zoft side of it, but also getting into the artificial intelligence side of ICAD, which was really important for me to understand on that side, and then kind of fusing those technologies together and how we could commercialize that business and try to commercialize that to patients. But I went back to Zoft at the same place that Zoft was at when I went there, which is with more reimbursement challenges, right? And their inability and to no one's really fault, but just the journey was difficult for them, right? The journey was difficult because positioning the technology in a spot where they could have permanent coding had been a long, long process for them, right, on that side of it. So I came back and we started to think about how do we generate evidence, how do we create papers, how do we give, you know, the societies that are important to this Zoft technology support and better understanding our technology, how do we educate patients on our side of it, right? So all of that reimbursement experience for me was important for where we're going to in my final step of this journey, right? Which is Prija Healthcare. And for the Prija Healthcare opportunity was very unique for me. At the time, I really felt at home where I was at ICAD, but it just made a lot of sense for me because Prija was a well-established reimbursement support company doing prior authorizations and building relationships with startup companies and working with larger companies and helping them through this commercial reimbursement journey, right? About an 8-year-old company that was bought out by our now private equity partner, Aldrich Capital, right? So for me, I saw this as an opportunity to, number one, leverage my experience from the customer's standpoint on reimbursement. Number two, start to leverage my years of experience around private equity and venture capital on that side of it, and knowing what the needs were of that type of company. And number three, the ability for me to go back and scale a smaller company like Prija to build into a much larger corporation moving forward, right? And I could start to leverage my operations experience, my finance experience, and again, my exposure to the private equity realm of it. Because Prija, you know, coming into it has an absolutely amazing story, a fantastic brand, 68 of various very, very educated, hardworking individuals over a period of time. So I was very fortunate to land where I did with Prija Healthcare and to have the backing of Aldrich Capital to continue to really look at how we expand our services moving forward to help that customer journey from concept to commercialization.
That's awesome. So I have lots of questions here, but real quick on Prija. So when did you take over? What year was this?
Yeah, so I took over Prija Healthcare in December of 2022.
Okay. And okay, it's December of 2022. Oh, so just, I mean, you're almost a year into this.
Almost a year into this. Yeah. And Aldridge Capital had made the purchase of Priya about a year earlier.
Okay. Understood. And, so how many, you said 68 people currently?
68 people. That's correct.
Okay. Very good. Is Priya headquartered anywhere or?
Yeah, we have two headquarters. Yep. We've got one in Torrington, Connecticut, which is our main headquarters. We house probably 50 of the 68 people. We have a commercial team and a field team that works remotely. And then we have another office in West Hartford where we have about 10 to 12 people that work there on a regular basis.
Oh, very cool. All right. I have a bunch of fun questions, for the end. So in terms of staying on the Priya route here, and then I want to kind of dive into some of your background, on the Priya. So are you, I think there's, you know, a lot of times when we're working with at least early stage startups or early stage startup companies, reimbursement is like a word tossed around, but not truly understood, right? Yeah. Like when people talk about reimbursement, they go, oh, well, we have reimbursement. Okay. Well, what do you mean? Oh, we have a CPT code. Okay. Or we have a Q code, right? They have coding down, but they don't understand that reimbursement is, I think the old analogy was like a three-legged stool or something like that. But
it's something we all want to avoid, but we need. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So there's more to reimbursement. So I guess, you know, for the people listening in, when someone says reimbursement, I mean, what does that mean to you? What are the pieces of that that make up reimbursement?
Yeah. Right. That's a great question. And I think, you know, from a Priya standpoint, what makes up reimbursement to support customers, and I'll talk about reimbursement in general, is that we have a staff of strategic experts, right, that have been in this industry for 20, 25 years that have contacts and an understanding, that have lived the journey of hundreds, maybe thousands of commercial companies, right, and understand the coding. They have certifications, understand the market landscapes, understand, you know, the commercialization needs of it. So for us, you know, reimbursement is about packing ourselves with the right people. So one of the first things we did at Priya Healthcare when I came here was to expand that team, right? We hired a handful of people. We invested in the people, the expertise, the individuals that we knew could help our customers. And we coupled them with this amazing group of people that are doing the prior authorization work, that are doing the heavy lifting day-to-day, the case management work, that are working with the private payers, working with CMS, that are driving all the prior authorizations. So for me, reimbursement, especially a company like ours, is the ability to help democratize products to bring them to a capability of getting reliable payment on these products, right? Because reimbursement is a broad term on the payment and what it means, because reimbursement is really our ability to bring these technologies to patients. Because if we don't find a way to get payment for these, and it's a very, very complex journey that starts early on in the process, by the way, which I know we'll talk about. If you don't start to do that at some point, what's going to happen is the individuals that are holding this technology can't get the right financial means to hold the technology long enough to get it to the patient. So understanding it early and giving them the right guidance and supporting them to get consistent payment is what I see reimbursement.
Yeah, I mean, and it's crucial. I mean, taking it like one step even higher from a higher perspective, right? When you are a medical technology and you are going to take a product to market, specifically in the U.S., we won't really cover the other ones, but in the U.S., it's a complex, healthcare is a complex system. How us as citizens take, you know, like consume healthcare is really interesting. And if you track the journey, your economic story is what we kind of call it at Project MedTech, which is we go through this exercise with our startups and say, okay, what's your economic value? What's your story? And when you go through that, it's complex, right? Where patients are going to consume your product or use your product, mm-hmm, might not be the same people who are paying for it, right? I mean, you have this system where as you know, health insurance companies need to see the value in your product, and they want to see them be able to keep patients healthier, right? Because then they don't spend as much money. And at the hospital side, they want to extract as much money as possible and pull that over, right? And so you have to follow this, and then, you know, they do this using clinicians, right? And so what's your value to them? And so it is a really interesting story here and model, and it's very, very complex. And it's why, you know, for us, and I'll be curious on your answer, we recommend thinking about reimbursement from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. When people talk about drivers into your business plan, of course, regulatory is one of those things. But it really hurts me to see people make business decisions off easier regulatory paths because they end up hurting themselves on reimbursement. Maybe they gave up on a claim they can't now make, and that affects their reimbursement strategy. So I want, from my perspective, those first conversations, I need a reimbursement person in that room, kind of just even there to say, talk through some of the basics. But I'm curious on your perspective as well.
Yeah, I mean, you did a great job of laying that out for me, Dwayne. And I think we look at it the same ways. And I would tell you that a large portion of our investment around marketing is to the early stage companies, because we really feel like this journey begins when that product is developed and they start putting together the pitch to the investment community, because they need to understand, they being the individual that developed this product or this company, what the capabilities of that product is going to be and how it's going to be paid for real early on, right? Because if they don't understand that journey and have the expertise of the people to help them through that journey, they probably will not get the funding that they need to get to the next level of it. So I think that's the first phase that we like. How can we help companies that have amazing technologies get the money to get to the Series A and Series B in the journey that to get their product commercialized? So that's really the first part of this, right? And the second part of this is once they start getting money and how do they spend their money, right? And we know that the reimbursement services are an expense, but we really feel like it's going to be an expense. It's going to accelerate their commercialization process significantly over time. And it was hence the reason why I talked about my experience on the reimbursement side, because I've lived a couple of different, you know, successes and failures on that side of the business, right? And so now we're going from helping companies maybe get the funding and creating that story and that journey to providing them the guidance with expertises in the field of evidence generation, coding matching, how do they get lined up with the proper societies where their product needs to go? What's their outlook? Where do they want it to spend their money moving forward? And how do they build some momentum with their product? And are they falling around the right stages? And the interesting thing about it, Dwayne, is that the first pathway may not be the right pathway, right? It may be the second or third pathway. And that's the hard thing for people to understand, is that, hey, we put this plan in place and it didn't work because the market landscape may have changed, right? Let's say you're in a certain segment like cardiology, or you're in GI or neuro, whatever that is, the rules might change, right? And your journey where you started that might change pathways. And that's why the expertise of having reimbursement experts, whether it's Priya or any other company on that side, is going to be really important, because it's going to help you drive your funding. It's going to help you pick the right direction, and it's going to help you when you get to that crossroads. And I promise you, most of them will come to a crossroads at some point.
One of the things I want to demystify is there are multiple scenarios where I will hear a startup go, yeah, we're 5-10K and we don't need any clinical data. And to which I say, you know, you need clinical data. Eventually, right? I was like, I just want to make sure we're clear here, because oftentimes we hear, well, we don't need any clinical. And then you look at their reimbursement plan. It's like, well, I understand you have codes, but they don't have to reimburse you for that, right? Like, you have to show some value. So talk to me a little bit about, on the clinical side of things, how important clinical data is for these companies as they're working through their reimbursement plan.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think it's really, I'm going to try to kind of simplify this, you know, in like, you can look at the menu, but you just can't eat kind of thing, right? And I mean that in all sincerity. Like, getting the menu is like, thank you. Now I can sit down and actually eat is almost getting FDA approval. And I'm simplifying a really amazing process, right? And all the hard work that goes into developing the product, getting FDA approval. And that should be a huge milestone. But that milestone is only as important as building the story around that, right? And building the evidence around that story, because the payers are going to be looking for confidence that the technology is supported by leading medical hospitals or individuals and has amount of patient data that you can have papers against that can validate the technology so that they can choose to pay for that versus possibly another technology or as a breakthrough technology, right, on that side of it. So, you know, FDA approvals is the first step in this process, but it does not guarantee. Matter of fact, it just gets you to the dance as far as trying to really figure out what that's going to look like as a fully baked product that will get reimbursement from private payers and CMS. And, you know, a lot of people, and these are our experts that are really driving these on our end of it, right? I'm the CEO who has, you know, oversight of the business and experience from a high level, but we have certified coders within our organization, people that have been doing this for a long period of time. They always tell me, like, people try to code shop sometimes, right? They're so excited about getting FDA approval and they want to, like, figure out, okay, this code looks good. I think we can put our technology onto that code. And I'm not saying that can't work and that shouldn't be part of a strategy, but what we find out is that people build a business or possibly have the wrong expectations around that. And we're urging people to kind of dig in a little bit deeper and understand that evidence process and the coding process so that they don't get it 4 or 5 years into their journey and spending a lot of money and then realize they've got to start over again, right, on that side of it.
Yeah, no, I love it. I do want to ask a few questions about some of your experiences in the past, right? So I'm curious on, you know, as you've kind of grown in your leadership capacity and now, right, obviously as CEO, I guess when I equate, I try to always look for analogies, right? So big football fan. So I equate like a business to a football team. You know, the CEO is the head coach and maybe the CFO is the offensive coordinator and whatever, and defensive coordinator is a COO. So as you've kind of progressed into, you know, really kind of leading the company now, for you, you know, your experience, what I've found, this is my own personal experience, is that my own experiences shape the kind of leader I strive to be, whether I succeed at that or not, you know, that's for other people to interpret. But I'm curious for you, you spend time at a couple startups, a couple strategics, a startup within a strategic, right? So each step of the way, were there little nuggets you kind of took and said, I got to make sure I keep doing this or don't make this mistake again. I'm just curious on kind of how you pulled from each one of those experiences because you have a fascinating background.
Yeah, no, thank you. What makes us as individuals and CEOs is that experience. That's why I wanted to go and dive into that a little bit to give you kind of a depiction of who I am. And I think, you know, part of it is I think when I think of the strategics or the bigger companies, for me, it was the structure that was important, right? On that side of it. I think whether you're in a small company or a big company, the understanding of structure, process, really how you look at the marketplace and how you deliver these processes as a group is really, really important, right? On that side of it. So I think I gained an enormous amount of experience from those companies. I think the experience I learned from the startup companies is that, you know what, whether you start at the coin toss of a football game, to use your analogy, or the second quarter or the second half of it, you know, there's always an opportunity to find the right individuals to drive your business moving forward. Because for me, it's a lot of my time has been spent in my first, you know, 10 months here at Priya, finding the right people to put this together. Because if we find the right people, that means they're going to deliver the right service, the right value proposition to our customers. And we have an amazing foundation here at Priya, but I felt like combining that with additional people along the way was going to be really important. And what I learned from my successes and my failures is to really have a better understanding of the market that you're going into, And once you have that understanding, to really bring in the individuals that can make impact, right, to the business. And I always say to my team, we want people who want to be here, right, who want to be a part of this. It's not for everybody, but it, for the people that are here that want to be here, it's going to be an amazing journey. It already has, and we're kind of like in the, I would say, the second half of this journey for Priya right now. So one of the things that I took away from the startup companies is really that passion and that energy, right? It's required for people that are doing this type of work, because not only do you need the experts, but you need the people that want to do it, that have the energy to do it, that can collaborate with this group, because the only thing that's constant around here sometimes is change in our company, right? Change because the marketplace is changing, right? We work in a dynamic marketplace of medical technologies and a reimbursement landscape. So the tolerance, it's the ability to educate ourselves, right? And to learn what's going to happen and look around corners to understand what the trends in the marketplaces are. That requires this passion to want to learn this, right, at the end of the day. So for me, you learn different things from the strategics, the big companies, you know, and the services side of it is really important too, and the experience over there of having it before coming here, because then you really learn about the relationships with customers, right? And how important that is. And you were talking about it when you were talking about like getting in early and building relationships. And we brought in a lot of people in the organization who have established those relationships. But it's not only establishing those relationships that's important, is that we're looked at as a credible source to our companies that we're working with, right? Somebody who's going to stick with you along the journey. Priya has got a great brand of doing it. Now we've added a lot of people who understand that. So the services side was really important for my makeup, because it taught me that getting in early, building that relationship, and being with that customer from the coin toss all the way through to going over the 1 yard line with 30 seconds left in the game, how important that is and why we need to invest in that as a company moving forward in a services type of organization.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And also you talk about the people. I'll throw a shout out for Tanya Dowd and Jennifer Saab, I believe. Sabe, I'm saying their name. Sabe. I had them both on a Galen Data webinar series. So I host this Galen Data webinar series for our friends at Galen Data. They're a cloud computing company, not a cloud computing company. They're a cloud for medical device manufacturers. You could actually check that out if you go to Galen's website. Tanya and Jennifer gave a great breakdown on reimbursement and coding. And those two individuals are awesome. And I know they have, you know, leadership roles within Priya. So I could vouch for the fact that you're putting great people in great roles.
For us, it's you know, we're helping products commercialize and get consistent reimbursement, right? But our product is our people, right? So every time somebody asks me about Priya, I start talking about the people, because that's really our product at the end of the day. And Tanya and Jennifer are certainly really good illustrations of it, but we have all sorts of people in the organization who are making big time impact and have the expertise and experience level that can help our customers.
Yeah, that's exciting. All right, so some fun questions here. You grew up in Minnesota, you lived in Indy, you lived in Pittsburgh. Curious, out of those three cities, they're all Midwestern, in my opinion. Pittsburgh is too. Which one's your favorite?
Well, I live in Boston now, so I don't know if that's included, because I've lived here for 23 years. But you know what? You know, I'll say this. You know, Minnesota has the, you know, the best outdoor skating rinks you can ever imagine in the wintertime, right? Uh-huh. Indianapolis has got their greatest spectacle, you know, of all times. And the thing I'll say about Pittsburgh, people don't realize, it is probably the hilliest city that you've ever seen in your life. It's amazing. I'd never expected that when you come right through that 4-pit tunnel into the city. It's an amazing view on that side of it. But, you know, listen, Midwest has been good to me as an individual. I've got a lot of roots around that. I've made a lot of friends, worked for, you know, a lot of great companies in those experiences. You know, I'm slighted to the fact that I grew up in Minnesota and my entire family still there for 25 years. But I've lived away longer than I've been in Minnesota, and I've lived in Boston now for 23 years and 24, going on 24. And I think, you know, living in Newburyport, Mass, it's a North Shore town here in Massachusetts, you know, it's got a little bit of everything for us as individuals. It's got, you know, a high-tech medical environment in Boston, highly educated individuals. You know, you got the ocean, you got the skiing, you've got a lot of the the outdoor stuff that we like to do on our end. So I think all of these experiences, like the companies I worked for, kind of create who you are, and they all have different things. But, you know, I am slighted probably a little bit more towards Minnesota and where I live now in Boston.
If I said
Boston, I would call it truly the city of champions, because I've never seen a football run going back to your reference, like we've had in New England for 20 years.
I was going to say, so have you converted to being a Boston Bruins fan?
I am a big Bruins fan. If you ask me about all the teams in Boston, and because I'm a hockey guy, I love the Bruins. I was heartbroken, obviously, last year when they had that team all built together and they lost in the first round after that terrific regular season. But it's hard to break that loyalty to your hometown in Minnesota. So I obviously follow the Minnesota Wild. And we have a saying at home because, you know, my wife's from Pittsburgh, and I met her there during my journey in Pittsburgh, that we get to choose from the Vikings, the Steelers, and the Patriots. Unfortunately, none of them are doing very well right now. We've got a wider breadth of our sports. So are you an AFC or an NFC fan? Well, I'll let you know depending upon the year and what it is.
Yeah, right? I love it. Well, you had a pretty good run for the last like 20 years, though, with both teams. So funny thing about Pittsburgh real quick, because you brought up the hilliness of Pittsburgh. So for those listening who haven't been to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so my uncle and aunt and my three cousins all live in Pittsburgh, and they grew up in Pittsburgh, so we always had a good friendly rivalry. But the most frustrating thing to me is that you could be like 2 miles from your place that you need to get to, and it's like a 10-mile road trip somehow because of how hilly it is. And the other funny thing is, so my aunt owns the Pittsburgh Party Peddler, which is the big bikes you see that you could pedal and you can kind of drink on and stuff. And when they said they're opening in Pittsburgh, I thought, where are you going to take this? Because it's so hilly. Turns out they're super easy to puddle, so it's not a big deal. But it's just, you know, one of those funny things with the hills there.
And you know what? Maybe on your way, when you get lost, you can have a Permane Brothers sandwich on the way.
Wow, and get some
meat and coconut fries. Because that's a staple, obviously, in Pittsburgh. Yeah. We make it here at home sometimes ourselves. Not nearly as Permane's, but it's certainly, if you know Pittsburgh, you probably know a Permane brother.
Yeah, that's right. Awesome. Well, hey, Jeff, I appreciate this. This has been awesome. We'll include a link to your LinkedIn profile, Priya's website, in the show notes as well. So depending on the platform you're listening into right now, up or down an inch. Jeff, hang on for 1 minute. We'll chat offline. But thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, Dwayne. This has been great. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If you need anything from us, you can contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. And for more information on Project MedTech, visit our website at www.projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.